In general, the market's reading this a little bit more on the hawkish side, in that the Fed is acknowledging that strong labor market and strong consumer and needing to maintain those higher interest rates, and it's potentially that higher for longer scenario.
Inflation on both sides of the border is edging higher, forcing central banks to strike a more hawkish tone, while rising oil threatens to keep the heat turned up on consumer prices. On today's episode, BMO Global Asset Management Portfolio Managers Chris Heeks and Alfred Lee and your host, Mackenzie Box, discuss the latest North American CPI prints and what they mean for fixed income investing, while also diving into what elevated oil prices could signal about where the market goes from here. Before we hear from the team, please consider subscribing to Views from the Desk on your preferred podcast platform. And for many more ETF insights and resources, visit the Canadian ETF dashboard at bmoetfs.ca. That's bmoetfs.ca.
Hello, and welcome back to our BMO ETF's Weekly Insights podcast with our team of experts. Thank you to everyone for continuing to tune in and to provide your comments and questions each and every week. I'm today's host, Mackenzie Box, and product at BMO Global Asset Management. Today, I'm joined by Alfred Lee and Chris Heeks, who are both portfolio managers on our ETF desk. So a special thank you to both Alfred and Chris for joining me today.
Good to be here, Mackenzie. Thank you.
All right, well, let's dive in. Alfred, we're going to start with you first. Some major headlines that we've seen this week in the Canadian market was the CPI numbers come in ahead of expectations. So the survey called for an expectation of 3.8%, and it came in at 4%. Will this force the Bank of Canada to hike in the next meeting? Can you just give us an update on your thoughts and what the market's seeing on this?
Yeah, for sure. Inflation definitely seems like it's back on the table, at least from a headline perspective. So this was the second straight month in which we got a reacceleration in the CPI year-over-year number in Canada. So just as a reminder, back in June, it dipped to as low as 2.8%. So when you look at that 2.8%, that's at the higher end of the Bank of Canada target range. So at that point, it definitely looked like inflation was being brought under control and looked like it was being stamped out. But obviously, with the print yesterday and the second consecutive print showing a reacceleration, there is some concern in the market that inflation is potentially reaccelerating at this point. So we did take a look at, a closer look at the CPI numbers. The majority of the gains definitely came from the shelter component once again. So if you look at mortgage costs, for example, that continues to rise. A lot of people that took out mortgages, 4 to 5 years ago, they're being forced to refinance at current interest rate levels, which, at certain cases, the monthly payments could be twice as high, three times as high in certain cases. The other component that was a big contributor, once again, this month was rising energy costs. That was another reason why we saw the CPI reaccelerate in Canada. So since the end of June, we did see oil prices see a pretty significant uptick. This has obviously hurt a lot of consumers at the gas pumps, especially during summer when it tends to be, the driving season. However, the concern with higher oil prices is, the second order effect. So oil tends to be used as a component, also factors in the shipping cost. So how does that feed into inflation down the road as well? So that's one concern that the market has at this point. Also digging through the numbers, it wasn't all bad news. So some of the silver linings in the CPI report was, the consumer did see some discounts, especially in travel. So airfare and tours, for example, that's been pretty consistent with some of the earnings calls that we've seen with travel-related companies over the last several quarters. So yesterday, we did see the Canadian dollar appreciate 80 basis points on the CPI number. It did close about 30 basis points higher, so it did move lower during the trading session. But, obviously, right now with that CPI print, the question is, what does the Bank of Canada do at this point? Obviously, it presents a case for them to remain hawkish for a longer period of time. So prior to when that CPI number came out, we're looking at interest rate futures. It was pricing in roughly about a 25% chance that we would at least get a quarter point move at the Bank of Canada October meeting. After the CPI print, that moved up to 50%. So it's essentially the market's pricing in a coin flip at this point. in addition to interest rate hikes, you know, keep in mind the Bank of Canada has quantitative tightening happening in the background now, which isn't expected to end until 2025. So that should be deflationary in some cases. But obviously, in terms of consumer psychology, you want rate hikes and forward guidance. That's going to have more of an impact. But obviously, you know, you don't have credibility unless you do occasional rate hikes. So that's kind of what the Bank of Canada has to ponder at this point. The other thing that the Bank of Canada has to consider is that as they continue to hike interest rates, that's going to factor into shelter costs, as, you know, higher interest rates means higher mortgage payments as well. So the good news is that, you know, the next bank meeting isn't until October 25th. So we do have some time until the next meeting. But I think the big data points that the Bank of Canada is going to be focused on between now and then is two data points specifically. The GDP number in Canada comes out on September 29th. The unemployment rate also comes out on October 6th. So if both of those come in a little bit hotter than expected, that's going to force the hand of the Bank of Canada to potentially move a quarter point hike. So I think, you know, what the Bank of Canada does is going to be highly dependent on those two data points. So the good news is that we do have a lot of time, but a lot of eyes are going to be on those two data points specifically.
Great. Thanks, Alfred.
Amid high interest rates and market volatility, consider BMO's top three ETFs yielding over 6%. The BMO Covered Call Utilities ETF, ticker ZWU, provides exposure to an equal weight portfolio of utilities, telecoms, and pipeline companies. The BMO Covered Call Canadian Banks ETF, ticker ZWB, invests solely in Canadian financials, presenting an attractive valuation opportunity. And the BMO Canadian High Dividend Covered Call ETF, ticker ZWC, features solid historical dividend growth. To learn more, visit BMOETFs.com and search for tickers ZWU, ZWB, and ZWC.
Next, Chris, we'll pass it to you. We just saw the Fed's decision come in, so maybe you can give us a quick update on that and what happened. And then as well, in the U.S., the 5- and 10-year treasuries are now at its highest levels since 2007. Can you maybe touch on what the bond market is telling us and how we should position our bond portfolios?
For sure. Thanks. So, the U.S. Fed just came in and they held rates unchanged this time, so maintaining them. Kind of similar to Canada, we did see the CPI nudge a little bit higher in the U.S. last week. So it came in at 3.7 versus an expectation of 3.6. But I think overall, pretty close to expectations and, you know, wasn't enough to move the needle in terms of rates at this time. You know, the Fed is noting that the economy is surprisingly strong and resilient. And, you know, the funny thing is that is both a good thing and a bad thing in some sense. You know, it's good in that obviously a resilient, you know, labor market is obviously a good thing to have. But then it, from the Fed's point of view, it may kind of create that scenario of keeping the foot on the gas a little bit longer with respect to interest rates. So, you know, if you look at kind of the comments coming out of the meeting, you had 12 of the board members anticipating one more hike this year, and you had 7 of the board members, you know, anticipating they're done for the year. So certainly near the end, but, you know, in general, the market's reading this a little bit more on the hawkish side in that the Fed is acknowledging that strong labor market and strong consumer and needing to maintain, you know, those higher interest rates and it's potentially that higher for longer scenario. No surprise, you know, as we get to kind of the rates on the 5 and 10 years, those are at multi-year highs. They're actually at about 16-year highs. The U.S. 10-year is now at 4.3%. Which is the highest since 2007. And so, you know, the higher for longer kind of scenario is very much playing into interest rates. Now, how can investors kind of use this to their advantage? Well, the second part of kind of the comments is, I would say, is higher rates have put a pressure on bond prices. We certainly saw that this year. But the good thing now is that, you know, bonds in general can be used to kind of fulfill their traditionally dual purpose nature. One is to provide yield. And the other one is to provide diversification and, you know, an offset to equities in the case of weakening equity or economic markets. Overall, the way, you know, I see it now is, you know, the Fed is potentially higher for longer. Typically, this does result in, you know, a an economic slowdown that'll last typically, you know, maybe potentially a year or so. We're arguing for possibly a soft landing, again, the strength of the job market being a primary driver. But I think investors should be prepared. And for that reason, you know, fixed income can really play an important role in portfolios. Number one is the income. But again, that diversification and really the diversification versus equities, I think, can play a significant role. So to mention one of the ETFs in the lineup, our BMO Midterm U.S. Treasury Bond Index ETF. That's our ZTM ticker. This is an ETF that invests in midterm U.S. treasuries, so treasuries of 5 to 10 years in maturity. It has a yield to maturity of 4.4% and a duration of 7 years. Now, 4.4%, you might say, well, you know, there's some more attractive fixed income alternatives out there because shorter-term fixed income, and we have, you know, several solutions, money market or short-term bonds, are paying in the mid-5%. But the important part, I think, in a portfolio context is not only is there a yield component, and it's slightly less on longer-term bonds than short-term, but the important part is that duration can really diversify versus equity. So, you know, as we move forward with higher interest rates, no doubt companies, people, society is going to feel the pinch of that. You know, as investors, we always, most of us at least, who need equity growth in the portfolio want to stay invested. So how do you have tools in your portfolio to diversify? And this is where we can come back to investing in 101, and fixed income can really help diversify a portfolio versus equities. And you need some duration exposure to do that. And the way that works is, you know, if we do get into an economic slowdown, the Fed will be forced to start cutting rates to stimulate the economy. So if they overshoot on the high rates, that's going to lead to a scenario where they cut rates. And those longer-term bond exposures can benefit a portfolio as interest rates fall. So ZTM, obviously U.S. Treasuries, is a very secure AA exposure. But, you know, as defensive as it gets when you start talking about U.S. Treasuries, and I think investors can use these yields to their advantage to A, earn a return, but also make sure that they're hedging equity exposures just to build a more robust portfolio.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Alfred, I know you kind of touched on oil previously, but we have a new question on oil prices continue to move higher with WTI prices now well over the $90 US per barrel. Now, how would you position oil in this current market and what kind of ETFs should investors look at?
That's a good point. As I mentioned before, or as I alluded to in the last question, when you look at WTI prices right now, they're up about 30% since the end of June. When you look at potential threats to the global markets, that's probably one of them, just because, you know, oil prices typically go higher before a potential market sell-off. In addition to that, right now, when you have higher oil prices, potentially it could reignite inflation as well. Brent crude prices are actually even higher than WTI, so that's trading at about $95 per barrel. Much of this has been driven by supply side issues. So when you look at, you know, OPEC plus countries, they have reduced output. Saudi Arabia, they recently came out that they said they do not intend on changing course in terms of supply. So that definitely alludes to, you know, tighter supply issues, or, you know, supplies will remain tight. But if you look at the oil sector, I mean, the oil sector is an area that we have been bullish over the year, last year and a half or so. One thing that we've mentioned several times on this podcast is that, you know, even though the future is clean energy, the transition to get to clean energy is not going to happen overnight. So as we move to non-renewables to renewables, that's going to put additional stress on the supply for fossil fuels. Because right now, when you look at a lot of companies, they've been reluctant to invest in, you know, CapEx or infrastructure on traditional, you know, fossil fuel, just because they don't know the outlook for traditional energy, given that, you know, governments want to push towards cleaner energy. If oil prices continue to go up here, you know, obviously investors probably want to avoid things like transport stocks. So airline and cargo stocks are, you know, the obvious ones that you probably want to shy away from. But the broader market could also face some challenges too, right? If the market feels that, you know, the economy cannot support higher oil prices beyond this level. I think the good thing is that, you know, as Chris alluded to, the economic data still remains pretty resilient, especially on the employment front. But from a broader market exposure, You know, if this does cause a weakening in the equity market, I think one area to look at is from a broad market perspective, things like low volatility ETFs. So ZLU, which is our BMO low volatility US equity ETF, that's a good one in terms of, you know, broad market exposure. The more obvious play is obviously, you know, our energy related ETFs. So we have two ways in which you could play energy stocks directly. We have our BMO equal weight oil and gas ETF. Ticker on that one is ZEO. So this is a good one that provides exposure to 10 Canadian oil and gas companies, equally weighted. I think equally weighted makes sense in certain sectors like this where there's not a lot of constituents. But by equally weighting them, you still get that pure sector exposure without overemphasizing any one specific company. One thing that we have noted also on, you know, previous podcasts is that because a lot of these underlying companies, you know, as I mentioned, don't want to reinvest in new infrastructure, given the push towards clean energy, they've been seeing a buildup in cash flow. And the only thing from their perspective in terms of, you know, what to do with this cash flow is just increasing the dividend. So we've seen this, you know, flow through to the ETF. So when you look at the distribution on ZEO, for example, the distribution policy, as with any of our ETFs, is that we just flow through the dividends. So the result of this is that the distribution on ZEO has continued to go up over the last year, year and a half. The dividend yield currently is about 4.6%. The other way to play this for investors that want a little bit more yield is through the covered call energy ETF. So ticker on that one is ZWEN. This one is a little bit of a different portfolio. The main difference being that it does include US and Canadian energy related companies. So all option eligible companies, similar to the covered call strategy on the other covered calls that we have. We tend to be a little bit more conservative in terms of how the team writes on the call options. So about 50% of the portfolio is covered using out of the money call options as well. This one's currently yielding 8.4%. But because of, you know, writing on only 50% of the portfolio, the good thing is that if energy prices and energy companies continue to move up, investors still get to participate on much of the upside. So a couple of different ways in which you could play energy, both through energy-specific ETFs, but also through low vol if you think that's going to impact the broader market.
Great. Thanks, Alfred.
Not all cash equivalents are created equal, and BMO's money market and ultra-short-term bond ETFs offer several high-quality options to park client cash. To learn more, visit BMOETFs.com and search for tickers ZMMK, ZST, and ZUS.
And last but not least, Chris, something we're seeing a lot in headlines in the recent weeks were zero-day options. Can you explain what they are and how they work? And can you also describe how they differ from the options that we use in our BMO covered call ETFs?
Zero DTEs, as they're called, or 0 days to expiry. They're a US product. And one trend we've seen in the US over the past kind of, you know, especially 2 to 3 years is a real surge in retail activity. And so a little bit different from Canada. Canada, you don't see retail trading options nearly as much as you do in the US. And perhaps that's behavioral. It's also just the ability to access the option market. You know, in the US, you know, there's firms like Robinhood, for example, where they make it quite easy to trade options, which can be a good thing or can be a bad thing. And that's a separate topic for another time. But, you know, this is part of what's led to a real uptick in volumes. If you look at 2023, these options have traded at 1.2 million contracts a day. And that represents 500 billion notional. And just in case it's not too clear what a zero DTE is, it means the option lists in the morning. It's created in the morning, and essentially investors can bet, you know, is the market going up or down that day? So that's kind of what we're talking about. It does sound like a bit of a roulette table. And to be fair, there are some investors who are probably using it in that way. And for that reason, I think there's some concerns of whether this is impacting the markets in other ways that could potentially be damaging. It's pretty interesting, you know, when you dig under the hood and the CBOEs, the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, they're the largest option exchange in the U.S. and they're also where all the S&P 500 options trade. They put out a piece and they've got a lot of insight into the market because they're the exchange. They can see the nature of the flows entering the market. For instance, they can tell if an order is a client order speculating or if it's a market maker offsetting. And what they found actually is, you know, despite this idea that it's really just one big roulette table, it's actually not the case. There's predominantly hedging flows, you know, are occurring in these products, and they're being used by market makers to help hedge their exposure. And they did an analysis where they looked at, as market makers hedge options, what they do is they trade the underlying stock to offset moves. And they looked at how much stock was being traded to offset these positions. And essentially, they got like it's 0.1 or 0.2% of the daily S&P liquidity. So, you know, this concern that these one-day options were causing some kind of market disconnections or market volatility, they're kind of dispelling that notion. That being said, obviously, this differs from what we do at BMO. I think with any kind of option-based strategy, you know, investors do have to consider, you know, and take, you know, take proper precaution. They understand what they're getting into. Tools like these can be very, very win or lose, very binary. We're selling in our cover calls 30-day or 2-month options. We are also using them to hedge because in our cover call portfolios, we own the underlying stock. And when we sell a call option against the underlying stock, we're essentially hedging that position and turning potential upside into current income. Although the CBOE report kind of said this is, you know, kind of a non-issue, maybe more newsworthy than really impacting the market, you know, I think for most investors, probably better to stay away from them or at least have a very deep understanding of the potential gains and losses on these options. But, you know, as a reminder, just because they're using derivatives, it can add to risk, but it can also defray risk. So when you look at our covered calls, again, since we own the stock and we're selling covered calls, in this sense, the options actually defray risk in the portfolio. And, you know, Alfred mentioned covered call energy. Again, that would benefit if energy goes sideways. You can turn volatility into income with that strategy. Just to mention another one that I think is topical is our BMO covered call Canadian Banks ETF. And holds the 6 large Canadian banks. The banks are yielding about 5.1% right now. And when you add on the cover call, that net strategy is yielding more in that 7.5% range. And again, this is a buy and hold strategy, and cover calls are just being used to supplement the yield and actually reduce risk a little bit. So that's something where I think, you know, investors can be have a little bit more of a buy and hold approach, especially if they want income. And, you know, I think that's the philosophy, right, Mackenzie, with a lot of our products. We're more buy and hold focused, not participating in one day options, but it certainly is interesting to see, you know, some of the developments that happen in the market.
Thanks, Chris. Yes, definitely interesting to see. So we'll see how that shakes out in the next little bit. With that, those are all the questions that we have for this week. So I just want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening to our podcast. And a special thank you to both Alfred and Chris for providing some great insights. And with that, I just want to say thank you once again, and we will see you next week.
Thank you to Alfred Lee, Chris Heeks, and Mackenzie Box for joining us on the BMO ETFs podcast. Today, we heard about the BMO Midterm U.S. Treasury Bond Index ETF, ticker ZTM, which provides exposure to medium-duration U.S. government bonds. Our experts also discussed the BMO Equal Weight Oil and Gas Index ETF, ticker ZEO, which provides an equally weighted allocation to major Canadian and U.S. energy producers. And finally, the BMO Covered Call Canadian Banks ETF, ticker ZWU, designed for investors seeking elevated income as well as growth exposure from Canada's major financial institutions. For more information about the other ETFs discussed in this podcast, check out the episode notes, contact your regional BMO ETF specialist, or visit the Canadian ETF dashboard at bmoetfs.ca. That's bmoetfs.ca.
Views from the Desk has been brought to you by BMO Global Asset Management.
The viewpoints expressed by the portfolio managers represent their assessment of the markets at the time of publication. Those views are subject to change without notice at any time without any kind of notice. The information contained herein is not and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice to any party. Investments should be evaluated relative to the individual's investment objectives, and professional advice should be obtained with respect to any circumstance. Any statement that necessarily depends on future events may be a forward-looking statement. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. Commissions, management fees, and expenses, if any, all may be associated with investments in exchange-traded funds. Please read the ETF facts or prospectus before investing. Exchange-traded funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently and past performance may not be repeated. BMO Global Asset Management is a brand name under which BMO Asset Management, Inc. and BMO Investments, Inc. operate.